Hello, and welcome to the first podcast for the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. This is Daryl War, of course. You may know my voice from some public domain readings of old books. And there were a few things that I wanted to go into. This is one of the shortest episodes. I have revised it for anyone who's read the previous text or for anybody who got the old recordings when I was not, you know, when I was using a pretty bad piece of equipment. And I was just doing that, you know, just for a lark. But I did have some stuff written for a possible intro. So, and I'm hoping to keep the intros pretty short and hopefully get shorter as time goes on. But then there's so much stuff about this show. I mean, it's over 1,200 episodes. And I think that touches a lot of us because, I mean, it's just pure exposure. Seeing these characters and these actors over and over again, and, you know, all of the same things, you know, the costumes by Orbach, and at this point for me, now it's Mosteler, and Dark Shadows is a Dan Curtis production. So you just get used to, you just get so overexposed having to go through every single one. And the other thing about the show that is it's sort of a pain is just, especially some of the earlier ones that I endured, that I should say my fellow and I endured, because after a while he got into it. It's just the length of those endless arguments about nothing. And you're just like, okay, can we just continue? And, or just like everybody sort of walking around being spooky or being scared. And, you know, and you just listen to that music over and over. And we will slowly open this panel and, oh, that's the end of the episode. Well, okay, now that we're, you know, however many decades in the future here, we can just pop the DVD and click ahead. And there we are, just kind of going, okay, now what's happening? Still very slowly opening a door or a panel or creeping into a room. You're just like, skip, skip, fast forward. I'm just tired of it. I mean, there's been very possibly hours of the show that I've missed on purpose for that, because I'm like, I know where this is going, and I'm not interested. You know, if I see something, it's going to be great, but, you know, like, I'll catch it. You know, if somebody says something good, or it'll happen, but, you know, for the most part, it's... And then after a while, it actually turned out to where so much was happening. I can't remember when. I want to say that it was, I think, when Chris Jennings showed up. It seemed like it started to really move. And it was getting more and more surprising. And then, of course, by 1897, you know, by that time, you're so used to all these flaws, you're so used to everything kind of looking a little... It's not... I don't think it really was low budget, back, especially back then, but, you know, for what we're used to now, looking really low budget. And, you know, and you see the dangling microphones, the teleprompter kind of getting stuck in the door, and, yeah, just all of that stuff. You just get so used to that. So when you get to 1897... It's sort of a shock to the system because the costumes are gorgeous, and it's like every single frame is spectacular. So that's like quite a shock. And then the story is, it goes a lot faster. More is happening. There's only been a few points where we have to, you know, fast forward and just sort of skim through it because we're all busy. You know, we don't have time for, you know, the nonsense that we can obviously predict with this show. So anyway, I'm trying to remember why I was talking about that. But anyway, I mean, hopefully you just enjoyed that bit. But I think it's just the program gets to people because of the exposure. You know, a 5-day a week program, I mean, you really have to stare at these people, listen to their voices, figure out where their motives are. And it's just exposure, so much exposure to those characters. I think that is really the biggest pull to it, is that there's just so much of it. So, let's see if there's anything else in here that I wrote. I actually started watching around 2006, and I had meant to for a while, but, I mean, it was, I've never had that much money, and so eventually, you know, those mail home discs, you know, that availability was there. It wasn't a good period in my life, and I had quite a bit of time to spend just focusing on something that was that extensive. And I was really unimpressed when Barnabas showed up. Although, there is something else, I'm going to mention it later. because I knew from just historical references that this character had been like dearly loved. And when I say dearly, I'm a little shocked at how dearly loved. I mean, there's some, in some cases, I get a little worried that the obsession is a little too extreme. And my obsession with him, I think, is a little bit different because compared to other fans, I'm trying to think of a clean way to say this. Well, I think that says it all, really. A lot of you have those feelings for this guy. And I'm not quite there. I'm more like, I'm a little bit more of an empathetic person. I don't quite visualize myself with characters, at least, you know, not, it feels like not in the same way. So when I saw him, when I saw it with just how wretched he was, I was like, what changed? You know, something had to have changed for him to have so much longevity and that people liked him so much. Because, I mean, that I was like, this guy's just cruel and a little out of it. Anyway, I was quite surprised watching the beginning of the show and thinking, they can't save Vampire and they can't do any neck biting. But wow, he could really lock up a girl and go on endlessly about how disobeying him would get you punished, which gave me some darker thoughts than just vampirism as far as, you know, my idea of it. Well, actually, this is actually in one of the episodes, so I think I can say it's just he repeated that punishing thing so often. I really got the impression he had this S&M thing going. And for that reason, it just strikes me as a lot darker. Of course, things change. So it took me a while to pick up on Barnabas's character as being admirable. So that was where I was. I didn't see any of the Laura stuff before then. Of course, I've seen little bits of it, which I gotta say, some of the early stuff, I was really amused by that blonde wig on Maggie Evans. And she just, especially her attitude as a waitress back then, she just had that kiss my grits thing going. I was just like, wow, I'm glad this changed. But that was pretty cool. And I could see that still being maybe a part of this character. Then knowing the way productions are or were scheduled and mapped out and having all kinds of different writers working on it, continuity was obviously going to suffer. What I've noticed about the show so far is when a character gets love and attention and the stations receive gobs of fan mail, I could see where the writers are either told or decide to turn the character's intentions around. But of course, this is a daytime drama, so there is the end-over-end explosion of evil and problems piling up on top of each other. So this story, you know, I did put it on fanfiction.net, and with all the hard work that I did, I was unfortunately very unimpressed at the response, or lack thereof, even though I knew that readership had climbed. And that's another thing that I'll explain at the end of this intro to get my point across, because it is an important factor when you're doing something for free and not necessarily looking for help with it, but you're putting it out there and seeing the reaction. And the reaction was, I'll just take it. And that doesn't sit too well with me. And I can't apologize for it. And if you're wondering or comparing that to any of my book reading for public domain works from Gutenberg, LibriVox, wherever here on Archive, that was something that I just wanted to do and wanted to do very badly and was often told that I could not do before the internet age, of course. So I wasn't looking so much for any kind of commentary or feedback on those. And the numbers help. The few reviews I've gotten help. I know that people appreciate it, having things available. But this one has been a lot more work. It's been serious work. The book reading was a lot of work, but this has been at least 10 times harder. So that's the difference. But at the same time, it's hard to know who's reading it. And the other thing that I do understand is it's hard to get into their system sometimes. You can't, you know, signing in is kind of a pain. So I can understand at that point. But when I was working on it for 2 years, that was when I was like, okay, I'm not going to post it anymore. And at the same time, I will admit that it probably was a good thing because it made me go back and it made me understand that with text online, it doesn't quite sink in, and to reach people's imagination, it really should be read out loud. So, in some ways, it was creepy and disturbing, and in other ways, it helped me to actually reach this point, and I hope that being able to visualize the characters with the caricature voices, it's just going to be better. So now, on to analyzing that part of it, the story part. I know that it started somewhat farcically, which this was a good opportunity for me to revise everything and make it gel better and actually tell the story that is going to be a better story. So it started farcically, and as I grew into the whole format, I started to it really got to me, the whole kidnapping thing, and it really got to me, the whole Willy Loomis thing. And so I thought, okay, I've got to address that. And it just started just taking over. I mean, literally taking over. And that way, with the word count that I saw, especially doing the recordings at home and seeing where the word count was in correlation with how long a program was going to be, I noticed that as time went on, I got to somewhere between 5,000 and 7,000 words. And that would get somewhere between 40 to 55 minutes, depending on sound effects and all that stuff. So when I went back, when I yanked a lot of the story and I just left chunks up, I looked at the word count and I saw that there was space to make improvements and big improvements. And so that helped it to become quite less farcical and more of a story that, though it has the spoof in it, has the comedy, it has the parody, it also obviously had romance, but then it really started to have a lot of drama. So when I look at it now, I see a bit of the film Ghost, if you've seen that. I mean, that one had romance, drama, and comedy. And it was, to me, it was more realistic for that as far as a work of fiction. And that's great for me because that's my preference. But anyway, my episodic adventure here, it has elements of the production quality of the original program with, you know, the certain flaws and stuff, which you gotta love them. I mean, they were working hard. They were working it. And if you've ever tried to just make a home movie with, like, say, puppets or something, even that's tough. I mean, if you really want to make it fairly good, I mean, if you're just goofing off, it doesn't matter. But if you're trying to actually show, you know, like, position your camera certain ways and make sure that, you know, the voices are audible and all that kind of stuff, I mean, it's work. I mean, it takes a few good hours just to make a little 30-minute segment or something. So you got to love them for that. You got to love all of the flaws and just, and I'm sure that fans do. I mean, it's fun to just go, ha-ha, but it is quite huggable. So that's why I feel that they needed to be included, like in episode 2. And my episode 2, Roger's going on and on about how he doesn't need a seance to prove anything to him. He gets bumped with the microphone. Sorry. The thing about this, the reason that that I've come to enjoy it so much, and I'll stress, it's not just enjoyment, it's actually been hard work, is just because I feel like I've been able to really get the characters down, like where if I have them say something funny, it's still them, you know, they're still going to be, like Roger, he's very acerbic, he has a wit and charm about him that can be really harsh, but still sort of lovable. And he, one thing that I can remember from the actual Dark Shadows program, Carolyn talked about Jason McGuire discussing things about Paul Stoddard, and Roger said something to the effect that there was no reason to take Jason McGuire seriously, and I agree with Roger, of course. And Carolyn said something like, well, why would he lie to me about that? And Roger said something to the effect of, well, why not? Out of habit. You know, that's the way he is. And I'm like, yeah, that is true. And so that kind of humor I really appreciated. I never got to see Roger get too grim, and so far, not yet either. I'm sure it'll be quite a ways down the road from here, thankfully. But there was, you know, so his kind of humor I wanted to adapt and make sure that I got it right. And he says in episode, what is it? I think 14, he talks about calming down and how extraordinary things for the worst being the kind of thing that they're always so nervous about, that he had decided that some extraordinary things happening for the better would be welcome. And I don't know where this came from. Maybe it's a line from some movie that I for from my childhood that I forgot or something. I don't know. But then he says, "However much so many smiling faces remind me of advertisements." And I'm probably not getting the voice right, but I was trying it. It just busts me up. So with the fan fiction idea, I've been told by a close friend that this isn't so much that as a rewrite of the entire show, although I am going basically from the 300s and probably will get to hopefully the end of 1897. I'm not sure what's there, kind of in the distance. I know the Leviathans are, and I'm not. I'll touch it, but I'll touch it with a 10-foot pole. So it's a rewrite in that other things are going to happen. It doesn't really make me think alternate universe. It's just more like a, let's reposition ourselves and try and find a way that everything's going to work out. And also, they're very episodic. And I didn't think that it was going to interlace so quickly. In the same way as, here's this one bad thing and here's this other bad thing, and what people are doing over in this plot line is eventually going to help touch this plot line. On Dark Shadows, it's usually something terrible that just makes it more messy and worse. And what I've noticed in writing this is that certain things that happen, they interlace in the same way, but they start to bring in an upswing. So everybody is helping each other, but also in episode 14, it's like I had Elizabeth Stoddard say, she says to Roger, she says, "Your more relaxed attitude has made some distinct changes around here, and possibly ones you didn't even know about." So it's that kind of reflection that impresses me with the way that this has all turned out. So let me touch on the let's see, there were a couple other things I had meant to say. What comes to my mind right now when we're touching on how I feel about Barnabas Collins. I know a lot of people want to just roll around with him. What I see is this guy who really got creamed. And, I'm not going with any of the extra books or anything. I mean, there's some paperbacks, the Marilyn Ross ones. But I mean, creamed. I mean, when I look at the data, the various websites, it just seems like, okay, he was worried that Josette wasn't going to marry him. So there's this other, and especially back then, I would presume there were a few drinks involved in this one-night stand thing with Angélique Bouchard. But that, it happens to the best of us. But the results are so extreme. I mean, they really are. And, so yeah, and I feel bad for the guy, and I don't really worry so much about him getting someone who's just dying to have him. It's more like, what does he want? What does this guy want? And I feel like I've done the same thing with all of the characters, really. I want to try and get everybody with somebody who works for them, somebody that meets their needs. So in that way, that's pretty much how I feel about him. It's not something where I'm like, ooh, gaga. I'm more like, okay, this poor guy, he made a mistake, like we all do. And wouldn't it be nice to see, to really see, like, what's the big deal? What's the big deal with this girl? Like, why is she so great? And having read plenty of very bland books about people just living their lives, I can pretty much see where it would go. And that's what I, that was the main, my main course in this. It's like, okay, what's the big deal with, this woman, or as the case may be, several incarnations of her, played by the same actress? And I wasn't seeing that anywhere. I looked for things that people had written, and I wasn't seeing a kind, nice place. I was seeing a lot of good work, but it was a lot of the continued torture that wasn't what I was looking for. And I am more than happy to read anything of the contrary, but what I'm talking about are things in a little more of a Lucy Maud Montgomery feel. And when I say that, when I evoke that name, she did some dark stuff too. I mean, she really did. And that was what I wanted to see. I mean, these characters are so wonderful, and the actors who played them are just so admirable that it's like, what would this be like not necessarily as like a sitcom or anything, but what would it be like if this was more like a very long, maybe 20 episode or something like that, like, or multiple, maybe mini series, where they're just working out their problems and they're celebrating who they are. You know, everybody's kind of celebrating each other. And that's also something that I see in the world at large. We're not really telling each other what our strengths are. We can do that. We are able to do that. But what I see is greeting cards. You know, you find other people saying it for you. Not coming to grips with the ability to say something more than, that's a lovely blouse. Or even then, it's more like, oh, that's a nice shirt. We've gotten really attached to the idea of constructive criticism. And what I see with that is a problem that tricks us into believing that we're intellectual. Like, how badly can I bash this thing? And how effusively can I just put it down? And some people, that helps them. I mean, boot camp works for some people, you know, more power to them. However, there's a strong pull, I think, to start using our ability to problem solve, which is one of the reasons that we even do the quote unquote constructive criticism. So I'm going for constructive praise here, and that's a concept that I believe I created. I'd love to hear if somebody else did. And it is trying to find the right words. It's basically like constructive criticism, but what you do with it is you look for the details about what's good. You don't just say somebody's nice or that they're sweet, you know, because they probably are, you know, you're probably saying the right thing. But you want to get deeper than that. Why are they sweet? Why are they great? Why do you admire them? You know, why do you respect them? How do you find the words to say what you like about that? How do you find the words to say what you like about someone and why you like that? Like, what specific detail of something that they are able to do impresses you? I think one of the problems that we have with that, honestly, is all the advertising, really, is because we have to deal with a lot of, this is a spectacular movie you must go and see, you know, because everybody wants to make a dollar or 6 million of them. And in that way, we don't like to say what's good because, as I said earlier, however much so many smiling faces can remind me of advertisements, and it just makes you feel kind of gross. You know, seeing all these billboards everywhere and trying to figure out how can things be really good without trying to get money out of me. And on that note, I also want to say that a lot of the clips I've used are public domain, as well as my own recordings just around the house or outside. And by the way, if anybody has some rolling in the leaves for my episode 15, I need some because there's some autumn rolling in the leaves that I need. There are some that aren't, but I've used them with an overlay of voice. And with all the characters that I'm using for this, because obviously it's not just Dark Shadows, there's the Addams Family, the Munster, well, Lily, really, Lily Munster. There's the Ghost and Mrs. Muir, Captain Daniel Grigg, which still, I don't know. The last time I checked, it was not out on DVD, and there are some fans for that TV show. I was really surprised to find that out. But all of these things, I mean, what I really feel like I'm doing here is some major free advertising. Because, you know, there are fans of Bewitched that'll probably want to listen to an episode or two, and then they'll get curious, like, why is this person talking to this person, and who are they, and let me find out. Or they'll hear a song clip and just go, oh, okay, well, I know what that is, I'll go and buy it. So that's another thing. When I looked over the legalese, I thought, okay, this is not going to be a worry, especially with how many people are, I mean, they just post whole albums by great bands, and you get a little worried about those guys. Or they, you know, they post whole movies somewhere, and you're just like, oh, I don't think a little podcast that only a few people are going to like anyway is going to be that big of a deal. However, that being said, if someone is pretty sure that I have infringed on any kind of rules, we'll just take it down. You know, I don't want any problems. But I just have my doubts about that. It's taken me a long time to finally get to that point. Anyway, so back to the story. So watching the program is pretty frustrating. and I kept wondering what would happen if everyone's hazards were more or less smoothed over and we could actually see who these people were if their problems were much more subdued. So that's what I'm hoping to find out with this. I noticed that many stories, and possibly even fan fiction, usually will find a way to see a problem, solve it, and then happy ending, down with the curtain. I'm like, eh. What does that look like? We don't get a whole lot of good news, I think. But I always want to step behind that curtain after it closes. What does happily ever after mean? And I'm not sure I can get that far, but definitely want to try it here. So right now, I have about 15 episodes written. 4 are pretty much done as far as the recording, the editing, and all of that stuff. I'm thinking about taking out some fireplace sound effects with 4 because they just seem too distracting. And I'd never really read that much of any of the fan fiction, not just because it didn't interest me, unfortunately, but also I have a tendency to have my own ideas, and if I see that somebody else has used them, then I'll just avoid it, because then I feel like they're not mine anymore. And the other thing with this is that it's not a crossover, because that's two storylines coming together. And obviously, what I've put together here, it's like a cross-blend League of Extraordinary Gentlemen type of thing, where everybody's, you know, going through. I also want to stress that I am really trying hard to get the voices down. I know a lot of them are total caricatures. What I've found so far, the hardest voice to do, of course, is Jonathan Fritz Barnabas. I don't know what he's doing, but it's not like he doesn't have an accent. He's got something. I think it's his inflection that I'm having the real problem with. And I should work more on Pop, and I should work more on Maggie, and Liz and Roger are great, I think. I make them a little too strong in caricature. They seem to come to be the ones that come to me the easiest, because what I've recognized with the... It's not quite a snarl that Roger has, but it's... I can't even describe it. It's sort of like riding a bicycle. You just do it. With Joan Bennett's Elizabeth Stoddard, what I noticed about what she was doing is that she has her A's. They're very, you know, the vowels are quite deep and different from like a Hollywood accent, or at least what we know as a Hollywood accent now. So the hardest one, of course, number one, Jonathan Fritz Barnabas. Number two, John Carlin's Willie Loomis. He was really mousy when I first did him, and I was not happy with that. So now it's a little bit more of a scratchy kind of, you know, thing. And Angelique Bouchard. She's been really tough to try and figure out. I almost had her sounding like Milligan for a while, at least my version of Milligan. And with Milligan and Hecubus, I just let them go. You know, it's like I'll listen for it, but I can't do Kevin MacDonald much justice with that. And I can't do Dave Foley much justice with that. And my versions of them are pretty G-rated anyway, so they're cartoony. But I do try, and I think I'm getting better. I think what's the worst part is having Barnabas Collins and the butler Wadsworth speak to each other, because their accents will start to mix and I don't know who's talking. But from what I've heard, everybody else is fine with it. It's, you know, they know who's talking when they're talking. So the first few episodes, it'll be pretty bland with Barnabas Collins, but I'm hoping that I can get better at that. Anyway, the main thing in doing the character voices is so that you can get a visualization as though these are actually the same people, the same characters. If you've seen the program, you can imagine where they are. You can imagine probably what they're wearing. It's just easier to see them in your mind that way. And that being said, I also hope that you're not surfing the web when you're listening to this, because you're not going to hear much of it. This is really good for washing dishes, I've noticed. I've gotten a lot of dishes washed having to go through this. Crochet, knitting, sewing, mending, you know, something boring, not going through your bills, something where you don't have to read. And anyone who is getting over an injury, that would really mean a lot to me if this helps you at all. A cold, I'm not so sure. Like a cold or the flu, I'd be a little worried about that, because when I have a cold or the flu, laughing is something that you can't really do. But hey, you never know. Like maybe it's just you listen to it and you just kind of sit there and you're at least engaged in some mental capacity so that you can just sit through that horrible, horrible flu, cold, whatever you got. And exercising. I notice, like, because some of that, you know, just exercycle is boring, you know, or just kind of walking like around the block, the same block, looking at the same houses over and over. But I really want to stress, do not listen to this on a treadmill. Please do not listen to this on a treadmill. Because I was listening to episode two, and I was just walking to work, and I almost fell down. So, no treadmill. No, just don't do that. All right, anything else I needed to mention? I have gotten a ton of signs about this, and I hope to talk about those in future podcasts. So, I would actually like to hear feedback, and it doesn't have to be a huge paragraph. One thing that made you laugh, you know, just one thing that made you laugh, or one thing that you liked. Just shoot me a message. It doesn't have to be a lot, but like I say, the part of the point of the story is seeing the good in other people and being able to describe it in detail. So one little thing, you know, any little thing that was a highlight, anything at all, I really appreciate it. A little bit goes a long way. It really does. And if you can do that for other people in your life that you might have neglected a little bit, you know, and it's not something where you don't like the person anymore. I'm not telling you to go, you know, get involved with people that you don't see anymore because they're bad for you. But, you know, maybe somebody that is always there for you, you can let them know. You know, that would really mean a lot to me too. So, if you want to send me a message, get out a pencil or type it down. XOISCYTHE at hotmail.com. Daryl War. It was Detta, but I think Detta's going to give it up. I think this is really mine now. Enjoy.
The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, Episode 1. Parapsychology.
My name is Victoria Winters.
Evil! You are not Victoria Winters! You are none other than manservant Hecubus!
Yes, master, that is correct. I was trying to fool everyone.
And I am your host, Sir Simon Milligan, and this is the Pit of Ultimate Darkness. I'm sure you're wondering if I'm telling the truth since we've been demoted from television to radio, but rest assured, it doesn't get any darker than this. Oops! Hecubus! My potion! You have knocked it over! I spent weeks brewing the perfect concoction. It would have enabled me to have the singing voice of a Braddock proportions.
Well, master, if it wasn't so dark in here, perhaps I would have avoided knocking it over.
I suppose I will overlook it this time, seeing as it allows our viewers with the insight that we are indeed in the pit of ultimate darkness.
Yes, master.
Now, not to take the limelight from you, Hecubus, it is my sinister pleasure to introduce you to a very wicked and disturbing place called Cullensport. One of the most tragic and demonic persons in the world has taken up residence there in the old house of the Collinwood estate. His name is Barnabas Collins, and he is truly a dear friend of mine. Well, maybe not too dear. In fact, he could be considered an admired acquaintance. But once upon a time, he and I were partners in a most ghastly deed.
Weren't you partners in a round of bridge once?
Shh!
I believe the ghastly deed was cheating, master.
Hecubus!
Where was I? Oh, yes, Barnabas Collins. I would love to bore you with the details, but they are so lengthy that it would take about 300 episodes to catch everyone up with the background and history of the Collins family and the town itself. Besides, the fact that you've tuned in means that you've checked your local listings
and are already a fan of the story. Or whatever version of it you know. The rest of you have merely tuned in at random, and want a tale that will both keep you awake and put you to sleep. Fear not. You've come to the right station.
Hello. Would you be Barnabas Collins? Who wishes to know?
I am here in answer to your advertisement for a valet.
My name is Wadsworth. Oh, yes. I received your letter just this morning, evening. Today. Won't you come in? Let me take your hat and coat.
Thank you, sir. I hope it will be the last time you will tend to my needs.
Impressive. Won't you come this way? And have a seat if you like.
I prefer to stand. It was a long drive, sir.
Of course. I am intrigued. It sounds as if you are eager to start by noting my hanging your things. I must admit I'm not accustomed to it. I only recently lost my last servant. Tragic circumstances, I'm afraid. I'm sure that won't happen in your case.
Tragic circumstances don't favor my bloodline. At least none that would lead me to Wincliffe.
Oh? You heard about Mr. Loomis?
I make a point to go over the local newspapers, both recent and weeks old.
Then you have me at a disadvantage, I'm sure. I only know you from your references, which I found most secure.
Your services at Hill House were exemplary.
Seems you took care of 6 people and
several deaths, or so I've heard.
You take me by surprise, sir. I can speak of no deaths at Hill House while I was employed there. Are you sure there isn't something you ought to be telling me?
Can you keep a secret?
Yes.
So can I.
I will accept that as reference enough, my good man. Now, shall I show you about the house?
There is no need, sir. I've studied the layout.
Why? How on earth could you have better homes and gardens, sir?
Oh, yes. That.
Most uncomfortable.
I'd presume it was most uncomfortable, what with having to sleep in a double base case.
It certainly was. Sleep in a what?
Shall I get straight to work, sir?
Yes, of course. You're fine with the terms laid out, as in your letter?
Perfectly.
Very well. I will excuse you to...
Allow me, sir. Roger. Hello? How are you?
I am Wadsworth, the butler.
Oh? I had no idea Barnabas had hired anyone.
It was only this very moment. Hello, Roger.
Well, he appears grand, to say the least. A far cry from old Willie, isn't he?
That much is certain.
Oh? Did you know the beast?
Not at all.
Well, that's in your favor. You must have read about him.
I did. May I take your things?
No need. I was about to ask you, Barnabas, if you'd investigate a slight disturbance at home. We seem to be having a problem.
Oh?
I know. When aren't we having a problem?
And so our two heroes plod their way to the main house of Collinwood.
After you, Cousin Barnabas.
Hegibus, close the door for them.
Well, it all seems as ornate and spotless as it normally is here.
Oh, the problem isn't here or in the drawing room. It's in the kitchen.
The kitchen?
Yes, Barnabas, you know that place where food is stored and cooked. Or perhaps not. I hardly see you touch a morsel. It's a wonder you don't blow away, my good man.
Well, I know what food is. I'm simply surprised that a man of your standing would encounter the need to enter the kitchen at all.
Oh, yes. It's usually Elizabeth's specialty, but with her in Bangor, I like to nose about once in a blue moon. This isn't the 18th century, you know.
Certainly not.
Ahem. This way.
What the deuce?
I know. You'd hardly recognize it with all the empty cans. The icebox is completely empty minus the splashings of vegetation and dairy products that are stained on the walls.
Egad. The floor is all sticky as well.
It is. Mrs. Johnson has taken to her bed from the shock, and I can hardly blame her.
May I offer the attentions of Wadsworth to help her?
Oh, that is kind of you, Barnabas. But it's the sort of mess that no one can clean.
Oh, but I'm sure it can't be as bad as all that.
No, really. Mrs. Johnson cleaned it twice, but it always returns as soon as she has it all straightened out and new supplies arranged. We've been forced to dine out most meals.
I can see why. It looks as if some wild animal has ransacked the place. Has any other area of the house been affected?
Not at all. Only the kitchen and pantries. It's disastrous. Look at the wall there. It's saturated in what looks like gelatine. Have you seen anything so strange at the old house, Barnabas?
No, I'm happy to admit.
Well, then let's adjourn to the drawing room.
Victoria. Oh, hello, Roger. Barnabas?
Ah, Miss Victoria, always a delight to see you.
Thank you. I wish it were under pleasanter circumstances.
Yes, indeed.
The stress must be considerable. You do seem most agitated.
I am.
Well, why don't we all have a sherry and calm down? Thank heavens for small favors. Our liquor hasn't been trifled with.
It hasn't?
Yes, isn't that peculiar? It's the only blessing I can see in this entire kitchen curse.
He does take after Naomi Collins with that, doesn't he?
Without a doubt.
Mm-hmm. What are you two plotting so secretly? Is this some April Fool's prank you both have conspired together?
Hardly, Roger. January's a bit early in the year for that, and I can't imagine what could cause the slime on the walls.
Yes, it's that has me so worried. It's so unearthly.
Gelatine is always disturbing, whether on a wall or a plate. I find it incomprehensible as a source of nutrition.
Well, I... Oh.
What is it, Miss Winters?
Oh, nothing, just... Hecubus, get the microphone higher. It's in her way. David has been going on about the disturbance.
Oh, really?
Yes, he says that he knows what's doing it, but I can't make out exactly what his explanation means.
That doesn't surprise me. He keeps seeing things and claiming odd beliefs. It's a wonder he goes on crying werewolf with all his promises not to deceive us or go to the old house. If I hadn't been so lenient, a jolly smattering would have made him resist such ravings. Now I've got a son more melancholy than Roderick Usher. What a delight!
How did he describe what he knew, Victoria?
Well, that it was something short and green, and floating.
Amazing! Are we to be bombarded with leprechauns that have an appetite for our larder?
A green being that floats.
I've been wondering if someone should stalk the kitchen in the middle of the night to be certain.
Oh. Who will you find to do that?
Burke said he would.
Burke?
And his mighty mountain of machismo. That's an excellent idea. Why not?
Ah, what a messy pile of goo! Perhaps they will find out what it is that's plastered on the walls, and who put it there. We return our vampire of oh so many woes to his home, where he finds his new servant making himself useful in the quarters of his excessively desired Josette.
I see. Found my little sanctuary, have you?
I suppose Mr. Loomis wasn't so thorough with the mothballs in this young lady's room.
Well, perhaps he didn't have time to be.
I gather that, sir.
Oh? Do you have a suspicion to express? Or shall I simply quiet it?
Oh, no, that won't be necessary. You see, I've had some experience moving a Mr. Body.
Well, well, then perhaps you'd like to help with the little experiment we'd been working on.
Perhaps.
Would your lovely lady on the wall have anything to do with it? Oh, dear. Grim problems there.
And don't I know it?
Oh, yes. Do tell. You have your own troubles as a paramour?
Oh, no.
But I do understand that your lovely waitress has returned to her own employment.
Waitress? I'm not sure I require a daft staff.
I'm talking about her in the portrait.
Yes, sir. So am I. That must have been one glowing account of this place in that magazine article. Too bad I threw it away in a fit of angst.
Understandably. But I think the photograph they took of you gave me a clue.
What?
How could you... It didn't come out very well, did it?
Who exactly are you?
I told you, sir. Wadsworth. Butler, valet, and not daft staff, as you have said. Is clever man on the list as well?
If you say the word. All right. The word. Ah, now I'm clever.
I see. With your arrival, we're likely in for some humor. We could use a bit of that around here.
Indeed,
and perhaps a little drama. Now, on to romance.
Ah, what does this new element to the old house have up his sleeve? I suppose we'll find out. Henceforth, for some of the residents at the main house, meals are taken in various other sections of town, and Burke arrives at Collinwood with three strangers. Carolyn answers the door.
Oh, Burke. Victoria's not here.
That's all right. I've been expected. I thought the whole family was out to dinner.
Not me. The portions at restaurants are so huge, I pretty much had my lunch and dinner at once. Who do you have with you?
Shall we come in to be introduced?
Of course.
The crew steps in.
This is Marty, Ryan, and Dr. Lesh. I went to the University of Maine and found Dr. Lesh lecturing on incidents of the paranormal.
Paranormal?
Yes, you could hardly say what's happening in that kitchen as just plain normal.
So, you took the liberty of inviting ghost hunters to Collinwood. Why am I not surprised? Well, I suppose I should show you into the kitchen.
Oh, don't worry, Miss Stoddard. We actually work to eliminate the possibilities, says Dr. Lesh, of anything like ghosts. We're hoping to find natural causes to problems like this.
That's a relief, Dr. Lesh. Thank you. This way.
Marty.
Ew!
Ryan.
That's nasty!
Dr. Lesh. Getting anything on the reader, Ryan?
Hell yeah! The Jets just beat the Colts 16-7!
Ryan, turn off the radio. Investigate the kitchen.
Meanwhile, Marty leaves the room to be sick in the lavatory. Ryan studiously.
This is just about off the scale for the residual elements, but there's no current movement. Hold on. I'm picking up something coming from another room.
Marty, terrified.
Dr. Lesh! Something came out of the toilet! It chased me!
Where did it go?
Down the hall!
Many footsteps shuffling out to the front door. Burke.
Everyone stand back! There it is!
Oh, says Carolyn. What is it doing?
I hope you weren't too attached to the flower arrangement.
This is completely beyond me, says Dr. Lesh. I can't imagine that floating green creature could have ever been remotely human.
It must be paranatural. The PKE monitor is about to explode!
Sound of front door opening and footsteps.
What the devil is that?
See? I told you it was real. I couldn't make something like that up.
David! Do you have any more yummies for me? Slimer needs yummies.
No, not again. No, don't try and hug me. David! Ah!
And now that you're on the edge of your seat, let's turn our attention to the coffee shop.
Hello, Maggie.
Why, Barnabas Collins. Hello. What a surprise. I never thought I'd see you here again.
Well, I wanted to come, but I needed a little suggesting, you could say.
Oh? You'll have to tell me about that. But I was sure I just locked that door.
Oh, don't worry. I just locked it myself.
You always seem to catch me on my way out the door.
Yes, I have an uncanny knack for knowing when you left a pot on the hot plate, too. Shifts.
So I did. Isn't that funny? Well, I don't mind. I plan on being up a while anyway. Have a seat.
Thank you.
Chair skid.
And I'll join you again.
Chair squeaking. So how is the old house coming along? Enjoying that distressed look from the curling wallpaper?
Oh, no. It's been some time since hanging new paper. Most of the old furniture has been upholstered again, though I couldn't bear to part with most of the original fabrics.
And Wadsworth?
How did you know about him?
Don't look so worried. He was in the other night before it started raining. He claimed to want directions to Collinwood, but I think he was simply putting in an appearance.
Well, that would make sense. He was well-versed with the house, mentioned picking up the local newspaper. He probably knew this town would be more comfortable having seen him than having to speculate on who he was.
That's true. They'll manage to gossip it up regardless, but we won't have to concern ourselves with Mildred Mayhem coming up with grandiose notions of, oh, him being a cross-dresser or something.
My word, hardly that.
Fresh cup?
Please. How have you been, Maggie? Are you feeling better?
Oh, yes, thank you. In fact, it's nice to see everyone again. Now. And Pop's not cooping me up anymore, thank heavens. Pacing rooms isn't exactly my favorite pastime, and laying around gets old after a while.
I certainly know what you mean when it comes to an extended lie down.
So, what suggestion did you need to clack that stick of yours back in here?
Clack that? You do have a way with phrases. As it so happens, I'd been meaning to see you again for quite a while, but I wasn't sure you were ready for it. So since I have managed to hire this new help, he let me know that you were back at work, and that perhaps you might want some company again.
Sounds like a pleasant fellow. And I definitely did want more company. Pop and Joe sure have gotten bossy since I came back. I can't really blame them, but I got fed up with it.
Yes, I understand about being strictly commanded. And I've been learning the receiver doesn't have much recourse for defense at times.
Ah, I know you've been talking with Dr. Hoffman, too. The historian.
Ah, I suppose you knew about that ploy from the beginning.
Didn't I? Anyone else at Collinwood figure it out yet?
Not sure. But they'll likely suspect. Then again, the family history is rather interesting. I do admire Miss Winters for her enthusiasm over it.
An orphan? Of course she would. But as for being bossed around, how about that, Doctor? Does that have anything to do with it? She is a persuasive woman.
Indeed. Perhaps there's something in that, but there might be a headstrong element on both our parts.
Well, I've got mine, too. I could recognize that trait.
think she's just obsessed with you looking so much like that portrait. I know I've been. Well, I think that's gone around a bit. So, I saw Roger, David, and sometimes Carolyn going by in town a lot lately. It's gathered they're hitting every upper-crust restaurant from here to Penobscot County.
And not here?
Oh, no, and I can't blame them. We're so common, we don't even have a name. Just coffee shop.
Well, not too common for me. Particularly the waitress.
Oh, go on.
No, really.
I know. I said go on. Continue.
Ah, your sparkling eyes.
How they so constantly dance. Your ruby lips and your flowing bedquilt skirt. Your brilliant lashes. Your macaw dress patterns.
You're terrible. Did you sneak a drop of brandy in your cup?
Maggie Evans, who do you think I am?
Roger?
Oh, no, no. That'd be far more than a drop, so I hear.
True, true. As delightful as this is, I must take my leave.
Oh, so soon.
Soon?
I wanted to know why the family has been going out so much.
Oh, that. The cook is on holiday, and Mrs. Johnson is ill.
Oh, dear. Should I stop around and see her? She's such a nice lady.
No, thank you. I hear it's quite contagious. Nothing to fret over, but precautions are being taken, and food preparation was out of the question.
Oh, of course.
Oh, don't mind me. I'll see my way out.
Come again sometime.
Do you mean that, Maggie?
Yes, absolutely. It's refreshing after the same old, same old. Besides, you seem like an old friend now.
Something familiar. Good evening.
Good night.
Wadsworth, you certainly get around. I was going for a long walk. What are you doing here so soon?
I've come to fetch you, sir.
Whatever for? There was quite a ruckus. Mr. Collins asked me to look for you. His car is this way. Very well. So, Wadsworth, how do you take to Collinsport?
As what, sir?
Oh, I suppose I wonder at your perspective as an outsider, it being all new to you.
I find it satisfactory. Pleasant ocean views, quaint seaside homes, plenty of space.
Now, how did your encounter turn out? I must confess, far better and less embarrassing than I expected.
Well, I suppose she's come through all the hostility of her kidnapping with the same glowing warmth, sir. I suppose, what with that doctor dangling a medallion in her face, which could do the trick on anyone.
I see. Tell me, how much do you really know about this place?
Enough, sir, enough.
And if you're wondering, I have a penchant for discovering what people do and why. I used to explain it all, but found it didn't always go over so well. A series of events with so many people upon a single homestead is quite confusing, even when spelled out. Another fine reference for you to come here.
True, sir.
Now, how did those compliments we devised turn out? I must admit, she took them well. I thought she'd stare dumbfounded, but strangely enough, she laughed.
It always helps.
Any untoward desires, sir? Oddly not. Though I wonder why you wish to repair such a friendship.
Ah, sir, I think you will find her far more familiar than simply in her looks.
Haven't you ever liked her for herself?
I see what you mean. I have had some trouble with that for a while.
Little do they notice the hulking van that sped in the other direction, nor the 1959 Cadillac Miller Meteor following close behind it, bearing the license plate Ecto-1. It has often been suggested to me that citizens of Collinsport have no peripheral vision.
My, weren't they going fast? Anyway, Wadsworth, too much excitement?
No, sir.
I'm accustomed to handling a variety of inconveniences.
Such as this one?
Oh, yes. Just pulled into the area when I heard a dreadful racket out the window. Lots of screaming. Nothing out of the ordinary for me, sir. I halted and got out, then went straight to the main house. As luck would have it, the doors were wide open. Mr. Collins was in a daze. When he saw me, he handed me the keys, pointed to this auto, and requested I bring you back with me when you were found. I didn't take my time. Mr. Collins was out of sorts, sir. Did he say anything else?
Not at all.
Roger. Roger?
Oh, Barnabas, I see your valet is no idler. I think you've managed to miss most of the trouble. Very good, Wadsworth. You may park at the garage.
What's happened here?
Well, Burke brought in a trio of parapsychologists to investigate the kitchen. David, Victoria, and I walked in, then this thing I can only believe to exist against my better judgment was engulfing the flowers on the foyer table. Next it came at David, practically went through him. Suddenly David was drenched in vile gelatine. With a mouth and tongue that size, I can only presume it expectorated all over him as it flew through the doorway passing us. Victoria saw to David, and I rushed out to follow it.
Good heavens! What did it do, then?
Well, it was easy to see in such a bright green coat. Almost glowing it was. I ordered it to stop, but it kept waving its arms and hollering some name like Jean or Nina or Janine. Soon enough, it reached a lady in the road with a scowl on her face standing beside an old ambulance. Three or four other men in greasy boiler suit overalls with large guns of some kind were standing behind her. When I saw the guns, I immediately stopped, but just stood there wondering if they were going to shoot at me. Thankfully, all that happened after that was the whole lot of them climbing into the ambulance and speeding away.
Frightful. Completely unheard of. How is David now?
Oh, Victoria got him into the bathtub right quick. I'm sure we'll all need a month of showers to get over this.
What do you aim to do?
I'm at my wit's end here. Call the police? The FBI? The Pentagon?
Well, I wouldn't... If I may be so bold as to make a suggestion.
Oh, yes. I'm open to nearly anything at this point. It's all so damned confounding.
I believe it was an escaped patient from Wincliffe Sanatorium. Why else would an ambulance have come to collect him?
Do you seriously wish me to believe that?
Of course, sir. The woman must have been his psychologist, and the other men were orderlies.
With guns?
Oh, yes, the guns are incentive for the few less predictable patients that reside there. I'm sure they didn't want to cause more fuss than you'd already encountered, sir. Well, Wadsworth, what makes you so certain of this explanation? What other answer can there be, sir?
Well, Barnabas, I do envy you.
Me?
Of course. I never have half the luck you do in hiring staff.
Ah, you do realize, Roger, that I've had both extremes when it comes to luck.
Yes. Now, if you wouldn't mind keeping me company, I believe I'll have a sherry.
I will gladly keep you company, Roger. In fact, I think I'll join you in a sherry. Or perhaps we might split the whole decanter.
We'll be right back.
All due respect to The Kids in the Hall, Clue, 1980s film, Poltergeist, 1980s film, Ghostbusters, 1980s film, and The Real Ghostbusters cartoon, and of course, Dark Shadows, 1960s TV show.